Hey everybody, welcome to the very first episode of the Way of Ramen podcast. So I've been posting videos on YouTube, you know, where I experiment with ramen recipes, trying to get better at making ramen. I've said it many times before, I'm not an expert, I'm not a chef, I'm just a normal guy trying to do his best to get better. Well, in this podcast, what I wanted to do was interview real ramen experts and real ramen chefs and learn from them as much as I could in hopes to try to get a little bit better, and maybe you guys could learn something too. Today's guest is Mark Hoshi, also known as Ramen Culture on Instagram and YouTube. In this episode, Mark shares his story about how after losing his job during the financial crisis of 2008, he moved to Japan to start a whole new career in the food service industry. He eventually went on to work at some of the top ramen shops in Tokyo, including Menya Ito. Mark also shares the dirty little secret of many ramen shops outside of Japan. It was something that I was pretty shocked to hear. We recorded this episode on the beach in Koolina, so you may hear some background noise, but just imagine you're sitting on the beach with us. Mark was also live streaming while we were recording this, so if he seems to be talking to somebody else, that's what he's doing. He's answering questions for his live stream. All right, without further ado, let's get right into it. Here's Mark Hoshi, aka Ramen Culture. So, you know, you're a first-generation Japanese-American, technically?
Yes.
How was that, what was that like growing up?
Let me get the mic.
Oh, yeah. What was that like growing up for you in California?
California?
Yeah.
Well, I grew up in L.A., in the suburbs of L.A., called the city called Torrance. A lot of Japanese in that community. Mm. The question was, what was it like growing up in SoCal?
Because, you know, you're like technically first generation, but a lot of Japanese Americans are third, fourth, fifth generation now. Like my kid's fifth generation.
Yes.
So what is it like? Was there like a culture shock, you know, for you? Because you were born in Japan, came to America.
Definitely.
Okay.
When I came to L.A., I only spoke Japanese. Well, I didn't even speak Japanese. My first language is Japanese. I moved out to L.A. when I was 8 months old from Tokyo. And yes, definitely. It was suburbs at the time, Torrance. Majority of the people of Torrance were still white people and not too many Chinese or Koreans or some Japanese, but that was early on. So I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be American. I wanted to be somebody that I could fit in mm-hmm. in the community. So I was a little confused about who my identity was. I Japanese? Was I American? Very confused, very insecure, and that's how I grew up.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I really feel like every time I meet Japanese Americans from California, it's like such a different experience than what we have here in Hawaii. Because at one point in Hawaii, it was like 80% Japanese or Japanese Americans.
Yes.
And so it was like I always want to ask people that grew up in California, like, what was it really like? You know, because so different. So how did you get into ramen? You know, because you're Japanese.
Yes.
Ramen's Japanese or Chinese to Japanese. You know, but how did you get into it?
My mom. She was a homemaker. Her degree was in food and nutrition in Japan, so she would always make amazing Japanese food at home. I love you, Mom. I miss you. By the way, we're here in paradise, where the way of ramen lives.
Yeah. Well, I don't live on this island. I live on the other island, but
he lives on the better island.
Yeah, the tiny island.
I'm here for just a vacation. It's our anniversary, my wife and I's anniversary. It's also my buddy's wedding. So we came out here for a week. And just so happened, Ryan wasn't in the area. So I'm like, Ryan, dude, let's link up. So that's why we're here. So
how did you get into ramen? Like your mom?
My mom was in food and nutrition. So we grew up eating Japanese food. Every morning when I go to school with my height, high shorts and lifted up socks, high socks, knee, up to the knees.
Yep.
She'd always ask me, "What do you want? What do you want for dinner?" Uh-huh. So, had a great selection of like tons of Japanese food just growing up. So one of them was ramen. Yeah, I'm more known for ramen, but I grew up eating tons of food. So tons of Japanese food. My uncle, one of the reasons why I went to Japan was because during the mortgage crisis,
yeah,
like so many other people in my generation, we lost our jobs. A lot of people lost jobs. So
What were you doing before you went to Japan?
It's very interesting. So I didn't study. So I didn't grow up. I grew up with in an environment where my dad wasn't around. So I used to get in trouble a lot. Mm-hmm. So when I was like getting to that age where I'm graduating high school, I was just searching for myself. So what I found was religion.
Okay.
So religion allowed me to go into seminary.
Okay.
So I had a good friend who I used to party with in high school. Always smoking weed, always partying, always causing trouble together. And then he chose the religious path. And I just started following him. And I'm like, what the heck is wrong with you? So that's what I was doing. I was like super religious. But during that time, everybody lost their jobs. And I was basically in the ministry, basically.
Okay.
So I lost my job. And then at that time, no one was hiring. So
yeah, I remember.
Just so happened, my uncle, he's a guy. If you ever been to Tokyo and been to 7-Eleven,
yeah,
my uncle makes the onigiri, the rice balls,
wow,
the bento boxes, the sandwiches, all the amazing sandwiches. And my uncle's a badass. He's the guy who invented the wrapper that keeps the seaweed.
The one you pull?
Yeah.
Wow.
You pull the little in the middle, and then you spread apart. He's the guy that invented that wrapper.
That's crazy.
So at the time, he was very successful. So our family's always been in the food industry, especially Japanese food industry.
Okay.
So it wasn't just ramen or anything. I just saw that Americans were getting all this information about ramen in English. And I just thought, I just thought it was just poorly done.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted my culture and the ramen culture to be represented well. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that doesn't speak Japanese, that doesn't read Japanese, that was bringing out all these contents. And I just thought, I speak Japanese. I've always been in the food industry, and the people need to know the truth. Mm-hmm. So, and that's why I started ramen culture.
Did you start ramen culture before you went to Japan, or was it after
It was after.
Okay.
I just thought there was a need of people getting the quality content, like information. I think people were doing a great job. I just thought they were just misinformed. Because there's only a few English speakers that was bringing out English contents.
Oh, definitely.
And I just saw, I was reading on all of them, and I was like, it could be represented better, I just thought.
How did you get into the first ramen shop that you worked in Japan?
Oh, so when I was in Tokyo, I was living in Shinjuku, the heart of Tokyo. Shinjuku Station averages about 4.8 million commuters on an average day. My grandfather moved to Shinjuku when he was 13 years old. He passed away in 2009. He was 100 years old.
Wow.
So you got to imagine, before the war, before all the economic success that Japan had, my grandpa was there. And at the time, you could kind of pick and choose your land.
Huh.
So he picked some nice land in Shinjuku, the heart of Tokyo, man. So I was living there. My grandpa passed away, and then basically there's a one-story house, two-bedroom, available for me to use. So I was living there and working at the same time for my uncle, and it was Shinjuku. And in Shinjuku, there's a ramen shop called Ramen Nagi. Mm-hmm. Mr. Ikuta, what's up? Mr. Ikuta is the guy who, the owner of Ramen Nagi. I just remember going there every week after a night of partying. And, I worked a lot in Japan, 6-7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And just to get that stress off, I would go out and party with my friends.
Yeah.
And after we go out partying, I come home, hit up Ramen Nagi, and get my bowl of ramen.
That was your spot,
yeah.
Ramen Nagi.
I was like, dude, I want to make this at home, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I want to work here. I want to know everything about this place. I love this place. And that's how I got involved with ramen nagi.
So you just asked them straight out, like, can I work here?
Of course, I wouldn't do that. But I just knew that everywhere in Japan, because I was in the hospitality industry. Uh-huh. So I worked for my uncle, but he built a hotel right when I moved over to Tokyo. Wow. So he built a hotel. He's like, you speak English, mm-hmm. you speak Japanese, come go work at the hotel. And I was in the hospitality industry, food industry, restaurant industry. So I understood that there's a need for laborers. Japan's population is continuing to decrease. Mm-hmm. So I just knew that there's always a need.
Definitely.
So I applied, got the job, had an amazing time.
Okay, cool. And then you also worked at a different ramen shop in Tokyo as well, right?
Yes. So when I was working at Ramen Nagi, I was still working for my uncle.
Oh,
I didn't want to just leave my uncle's business. Mm-hmm. You know, it's we're Asian culture, man. Like, we have to respect the system. We have to respect our culture. Mm-hmm. We have to respect our family. Of course, it's because of my uncle that I was able to go to Tokyo. Mm-hmm. It's because of my family I was able to live in Tokyo. And I couldn't just leave a great job, a great situation. Basically, he was raising me up to take over that hotel.
Wow.
So I just didn't want to leave right away. I just wanted to see if this is something I was that I could do. Mm-hmm. So I was still working at Ramen Nagi and working full time at my uncle's hotel. So after a season, I'm like, I think I could. I'm willing to do this thing. But for me, I just wanted to learn from the best. So I looked, you know, at the time I was studying ramen, all this stuff. But if I'm going to do this, I want to learn from the best.
Yeah.
So I went to the highest rated ramen shop in all of Japan. Menya Ito, Mr. Sakamoto, Sakamoto-san. Arigatou gozaimasu. Gotta just respect and honor the people that helped me get to where I am. Mr. Sakamoto hired me, and it's history from there. I got to meet amazing heavy hitters in the industry.
I can
and
imagine.
Also, like, you know, people, I've seen a lot of people doing a lot of ramen Instagrams recently, but there's a lot of guys in Japan that's always been, they grew up eating ramen, man. Like, they know a lot more than me, and those guys started to come to the shop, mm-hmm. and then I get to have a conversation with them and get some advice, be educated by the ramen junkies of Japan. So that was a great opportunity.
And how long did you work at Nagi and then Menya Ito? Like, what was the time period?
Nagi is off and on. Mm-hmm. It was part-time. I wasn't really committed. Mm-hmm. For Ito, I was probably there part-time and full-time. About a year and a half, a little more, year and a half.
That's really cool. And then, so what made you move back from Japan to New York City?
So I wanted to, I was living in Tokyo for a while. I loved it. I enjoyed it. I miss it. But I felt like America was starting to even grow. The interest in ramen was growing and growing and growing, and it's still growing.
Well, Japanese food in general in America is
definitely
very popular.
And but I also got married, mm-hmm. and I wanted to raise my family in America, back in America. I grew up being bilingual. It's given me, you know, a great mm-hmm. opportunity. And while I was living in Tokyo, I met this amazing girl who loves ramen, by the way. She loves EAK ramen. And nice. Another reason I got into ramen was because, again, I grew up in L.A., where there's a lot of Mexican food,
yeah.
in and out, great pho in O.C. If you go to, like, the 626 area, Monterey Park, amazing Chinese community. So I just didn't get Japan. Tokyo definitely has the largest concentration of Michelin star chefs, mm-hmm. but they were just missing on, like, the Mexican, East L.A. Mexican food, or, like, In-N-Out quality hamburgers.
Yeah.
And now, Japan raises the standard. Everything that they do, from cars to electronics, they take somebody's invention, they make it better. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted the authentic Mexican food and hamburgers. So I remember not getting that in Tokyo. And I just remember thinking, I need to make sure my wife, when she comes to America, I want to be her to be able to say, this is authentic ramen.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I started learning how to make ramen. I wanted to cook my wife authentic Japanese ramen.
Well, the standards are so high. Like, I talk to my friends in Japan that are ramen fans.
Yeah.
And they're like, I can't, they're like, the standard is so high. Like, if it's just slightly off, like, I can't drink this soup. It was terrible, you know?
Yes.
Kore mazui, you know, they say something like that, you know? It's like, wow, that's a pretty high standard for, you know,
definitely.
You're shooting for.
And it's a country that they don't accept tips.
Yeah.
The service is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. They don't do it for tips. It's just the customers, literally, there's a saying in Japanese, customers are gods, mm-hmm. lowercase gods. And and I just had a hard time understanding it. But once I got that concept, my ability to serve customers, to make them happy, just changed. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, definitely, Japanese food standard, service standard is top-notch.
What does your wife think about New York pizza?
New York pizza? she loves cheese pizza, man.
Good stuff.
She loves cheese pizza.
Cool. So let's talk about ramen culture a little bit. You kind of started getting into it.
But, yeah.
You know, let's talk about a little bit more, like, what you're working on now and, like, what you want it to be. And, you know, I see you traveling all over the place.
Yes.
Eating at ramen shops. And you were, like, in South America or something, or, like, in Mexico or something?
I was in Mexico in September. So what I do, what I was doing was I worked as a consultant for a huge the largest noodle manufacturer in Japan. Mm-hmm. So they would send me out, do market research, help build out ramen shops, and also do a lot of consulting, also teach them how to make ramen.
Yeah.
So that's what one of the reasons why I was traveling so much.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's what I was doing. So that gave me the opportunity. I was always, like, eating ramen all the time.
Yeah.
For me personally, I know that there's a lot of people that when they go to Japan, all they want to do is ramen. Mm-hmm. I come from a different camp. I like to understand the culture first, and I need to understand their taste palate first, mm-hmm. before I understand why they're serving this type of ramen. So what I like to do is, yes, definitely I'll eat different ramen shops, but I'll check out different, like, famous spots, like, mm-hmm. where the locals eat. So I'm in Hawaii today since Thursday, and all I'm doing is checking out all the local spots. And then I'm going to start attacking the ramen shop, because it gives me a better understanding of what kind of food they like, basically. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, traveling, did that for work. Now I'm just focusing on consulting. Mm-hmm. I was traveling so much that I was missing my time with my wife and my daughter. My daughter's year in 4 months today.
Yeah.
And it's also my anniversary today. Love you, Chiharu, Mini, Mrs. Ramen Culture and Mini Ramen Culture. And I just, because to me, family is important.
Yeah.
My dad wasn't around in my life, so I want to make sure I'm there for my daughter. So
for sure.
My princess is everything to me. So now I'm more independent, doing consulting on the side, mm-hmm. and have a little more free time to do stuff like this.
So did you try the Simon in Hawaii yet?
Oh, yeah. I just had it at Zippy's. Does that count, Zippy's?
It counts.
I have a list. People give me a list. But Sundays and Mondays, it seems like a lot of these places are closed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody so Sunday, it was my friend's wedding, so I had to run around a few these past few days, but now I have some relaxing time, so I'll check them out.
Yeah, me personally, I actually like ramen a lot better than Simon.
Really?
I feel like Simon was, when the Japanese and Chinese immigrants came to America or to Hawaii like 100 years ago, they're like, I really want to eat, you know, chuka soba or shina soba, and they couldn't make it, so they just used whatever they had here, and that developed into Simon. But I personally like ramen a lot better. So what do you think about the state of, like, ramen making outside of Japan? You know, Japan is pretty much to a science now, and people are still experimenting. People are still coming up with creative, you know, new recipes. But what do you think, what do you see, like, because you've traveled so much, what do you see as like the state of the ramen culture essentially outside of Japan?
The state of ramen culture?
Outside of Japan.
Outside of Japan?
Yeah.
Man, there's money to be made. That's what I think. A lot of people, I get a lot of DMs from Europe, in America, Indonesia. What's up, Indonesia? There's a lot of ramen fans in Indonesia.
Philippines, too.
Philippines, definitely. Mm. And, dude, I love the fact that they're super into it. And ramen is an industry that it's easy to get into. You don't have to go to culinary school. Mm-hmm.
I didn't go to culinary school.
And it's also the market for ramen. Like, people could afford $10, $15.
Yep.
In Japan, by the way, is you could buy chuka soba for 390 yen at Hidakaya.
Well, that's what I like about ramen. It's not really pretentious. It's just everyday people food.
Yes.
It's very high quality. So
it's cheap. College kids could go, high school kids could go and grab it.
As far as like ramen shops that you've eaten at outside of Japan,
yeah,
like are they implementing like Japanese style techniques to make ramen? The beer is going up. Or are they kind of like, you know, reverse engineering the final product and saying, I think this is how I make it. Like, what have you seen? Because I like you've said earlier, like I've seen a lot of English recipes for ramen online. And a lot of it seems to be reverse engineered in the sense where, like, I think this is what kind of goes into this taste and makes this taste. But it's not like, you know, in Japanese style ramen, you have the tare, komiyabura, you know, you have these things and you have like an order that you do at things.
Yeah.
Like, what have you seen when you've been traveling? Has it been a lot of like traditional, authentic Japanese styles of preparation, or has it been like a, you know, their take on creating ramen?
I'm going to disappoint a lot of people. I'm going to disappoint a lot of people, but there's a lot of pre-made stuff. So
the industry secrets are leaking out.
But I'm not working in the industry anymore. Uh-huh. So before I can like be upfront about that, but there's already places that already sell soup. I'm not going to name brands, because I know all these guys in the industry, and they're my friends. So
yeah. Of course.
But there's money to be made, so it makes sense for them to do that. And then these businesses, guys who want to open up ramen shop, a lot of them don't know how to make ramen.
Mm-hmm.
And but all you have to do is have the pre-made stuff, pre-made product A, pre-made product B, soup, the five elements. You have that, and then you're good.
Mm-hmm.
So
I had no idea.
But I do see guys who want to be the best. Those are the guys that I relate to,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to do half-assed. They want to be the best.
Yeah.
But there's guys who want to make money. I get that. They're businessmen.
Yeah.
So I get it. But when a guy says, "Hey, I want to learn how to make ramen from scratch,"
yeah,
then I'm like, okay. I'm an open book, man.
Yeah.
And they're sincere. They're genuine because they want to bring quality ramen in their community. Then that's when I'm like, dude, we're friends, we're family.
Yeah.
Like, I'll help you with that, because ramen culture is about that. If we continue to raise the standard of quality ramen, all these shops that's doing it half-ass, mm-hmm. they're going to have to pick it up.
Yeah.
And that means if they start picking it up, everyone's going to start having higher quality ramen.
That's really cool. I had no idea. I thought everybody was making everything from scratch. That's how naive I am.
Not everybody.
Okay, let's get into some questions from people. So I put it up on Instagram and YouTube that I'm going to be interviewing you.
What's up, Instagram?
Yeah, and I got a bunch of stuff. Let me see.
What's up, Tokyo? What's up, Torrance?
Gosh, it's like...
Man, y'all at the beach and I'm freezing my ass off in Ohio. CG Custer. What's up? Yeah, I came from New York. It was freezing out there, too.
Where did the questions go? Oh, here they are. Right there.
I'm here with Way of Ramen. He has a YouTube channel.
Check it out. Follow him.
This is going to be the first podcast.
Way of Ramen.
Yeah.
His first podcast.
Yep. First guest. The most important guest. That's what they say. Okay, so there's a couple of questions about vegan ramen. I'm not sure how
vegan ramen. Yeah,
familiar with vegan.
They're good,
ramen,
man.
But what are the most important? This is from Shannon Rosalie, I think.
Shannon Rosalie.
Yep. And so, what are the most important flavor substitutes when cooking vegan ramen? When you know, because you can't use the bones, you can't use the pork, the fats derived from animals. Like, what do you think are the most important kind of like good flavors that you can use to substitute when you're making vegan ramen?
It really depends. If you want to have like a creamy flavor or a little more clear broth. So clear broth, you could just use kombu and shiitake and make, or vegetables, throw it in there. If you want creamy, you could use potatoes, make it a little bit thick.
Like soy milk.
Soy milk, almond milk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Easy.
Cool. And what about like the fat component? What can you do with that?
Fat just component, just use vegetable oil. And use make aroma oil.
Nice.
Like negi aroma oil. Anything vegetarian. Garlic aroma oil. If you don't know how to make aroma oil, check out my YouTube channel.
Yeah, check out Ramen Culture on YouTube. All right, next question is from Tom from Vermont. And he says, at what point is a bowl of ramen just noodle soup? What defines a bowl of ramen?
So, pasta is noodle.
Okay.
Right? Vermicelli is noodle.
Yeah.
And there's all these other kinds of noodles. But what ramen is makes ramen is the kanji that's in the flour. And the alkaline water makes it into basically ramen noodles. So that's the simple answer for you. It has to have alkaline water in there to make it into ramen. So I get it. There's a lot of places that have veggie, non-gluten, gluten-free ramen, and they'll put like rice noodle in there. But there's no such thing technically a gluten-free ramen bowl.
If you want to go authentic, right?
Yeah. Good stuff. But but because you need options for your customers, it makes sense. You could name it ramen, but technically, but I'm not too technical. So you could do what you could name it whatever you want. It's a business. So
when Japanese people hear the word men, are they thinking about chuka men or are they thinking about just like pasta or anything? Is like the first thing that comes to mind. Because if you just translate it, men means noodles, right? But
yes.
But when they think about men, are they imagining like alkaline, like kansui noodles, or are they imagining just, oh yeah, pasta and ramen noodles and et cetera, black bean noodle and rice noodle? Like,
I that's a good question, man.
Yeah.
Let me call my mom.
Well, you don't have to. That was my question, so you don't have to.
I think it's men or men.
Yeah.
Ramen or men, right? I think it's the ramen men.
Ramen, right? Chukamen. Yeah. Okay, let's see what else we got. So, Ramen Onegai responded with...
Ramen Onegai. What's up? Ramen Onegai.
Yeah. Got any
Thanks for following me.
Any tips for aspiring ramen chefs and how to spread the ramen culture?
Contents.
I agree.
Keep pushing out contents. What your journey of becoming that amazing ramen chef. I think Ramen Onegai is in Europe.
I think
you're in Europe, and the Europe. I know you have, and you guys in Europe, you guys have a difficult time getting access to noodles. So, but I know people in the industry, they're trying to push it out there. So, there's a market for it. So it's just going to continue to grow, and I think it's just content. It's just growing, making different broth, different noodles, and if you start teaching from your YouTube channel or your Instagram channel, you become better at what you're doing. Because once you teach, then you become an expert of what that recipe that you made is all about. So I feel like you just keep doing what you're doing. And Ramen Onegai, you're doing a good job. So I think I see you on Instagram and you're doing a good job.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like these people that are just like everywhere, but they're just as fanatical about making good ramen.
Yes.
Like all over the world. That was the craziest thing to me. Like I never... Because, like I said, you know, like you said, you search around the internet for ramen recipes and you have, like, these completely inauthentic recipes and methods of, you know, tsukurikata is, like, completely wrong. But then you then when I started putting out videos, I started finding all these kind of people that are just like super into it, know a ton, and it's all just self-taught, you know? That's pretty crazy. So Ryan Wants Ramen. This is not me, by the way. This is a different Ryan.
Ryan
Wants Ramen on Instagram says, tips for making noodles in large quantities besides a hand crank pasta roller. You don't really make noodles, right? You just, because you worked at like a noodle place.
Yeah. So, yeah. Noodles take a long time.
Yeah, noodles is tough.
You have to pick and choose. You got to sacrifice some things. You keep posting on Instagram or making noodles and pounding that baby. Large quantity? Large quantity. You got to... Ryan, why are you asking me that? Do you have a shop or...
He wants to make a shop, probably.
Okay. Talk to me about large quantity. I could recommend you a... Basically, you need a noodle machine that's going to cost you about $20,000 to $40,000.
Is that how much those things cost?
Those things.
I was looking at them, but they don't put the price on the internet.
Of course not. There's different noodle making machines out
there. Yeah, yeah. I was looking at them. I was like, oh, maybe I'll just buy one of these. But if they're $20,000, I'm not going to...
There's a number of them. And I don't promote... like brands and stuff, so I'm not going to mention any of them, but if you DM me, I'll tell you later.
Okay, cool,
behind the scenes, and then you could DM me, and then I'll tell you. But large quantity, you got to get a noodle machine, and that's the only way. You can make about 100 servings per hour with a large machine. I have a little a machine that's... no longer in production. It's called Ono Seimenki. You crank it. It's very old.
I've seen those before.
It's not in production anymore. You can only get it in Japan. So if you need information about that, they sell on Japan's Yahoo Auction, and you can access it, but you need somebody in Japan to ship it to you. So,
cool.
But if you're interested, I could help you get that stuff.
Cool. So this is questions from YouTube now. So Orca Green asked...
What's his name?
Orca Green.
Orca Green.
Yep.
What's up?
What is your favorite type of ramen?
My favorite type is EAK ramen.
Oh, yeah. That's good stuff.
Because my wife and I, like, in Japan, it's just... girls don't go out to eat ramen by themselves.
Is it always like a date or something? Or
No, it's not even a date. It's a dude's thing.
Oh, really?
It's a guy thing, right? So a lot of dudes would... go eat ramen after they're drunk and all that. So it's hard for girls, single girls, a cute girl like my wife, to go in there and eat ramen. So early on, we would go out to eat EAK ramen quite a bit. When we were living together in Tokyo, like there was an EAK ramen shop that we would frequently go after my day at Meiya Ito. I ate ramen for lunch and dinner, and then after work I'll get more ramen. Eating EAK. So I knew that she was already asleep when I would come home, but I knew that I needed some time with her, just to see she's okay, and then just to touch base with her. So our bonding time was with EAK ramen. When I was working long hours.
And EAK is like shoyu tonkotsu style with chicken and chicken oil.
Yes, EAK was originally started by Yohan, Mr. Yoshimura. He has a famous shop called Yoshimura Ya. The Ya, the last character in that shop, the Ya means house. So a lot of people who opened up a lot of EAK shops, they honor him and respect him by putting that house kanji, Chinese character on there. So in 1974, he was a truck driver, and then he opened up his ramen shop, Yoshimura Ya, in Yokohama area, and then it blew up, man.
Wow.
I think people understand it. It was people in Tokyo loved shoyu ramen. People in Kyushu down south loves tonkotsu ramen. He just basically brought it all together, mixed it together, and then created a EAK ramen. So it's amazing. I think America, if they do it right, like how they do it in Japan, in America, like it'll blow up. It'll blow up.
Yeah, EAK is phenomenal. This next question, I don't think I can ask it on the thing, but I'll let you just read it if you can see it. It's kind of like...
It's in Japanese?
It's not in Japanese, but It has Japanese words in it, the second continent.
Nani? Dogo? Where is it? Where's the best flower? Which is the best flower to use?
No, the one right above that. Don't read it out loud. Or you can if you want to.
Ask him if it's okay to propel your chin-chin at an onsen. Thanks, looking forward to the podcast.
Do you know that guy?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Okay. You can answer that if you want to or not.
Yeah, when you're in grade school, you're free to do whatever you want. And also, if you're around your dudes,
your friends,
I'll do it in front of my friends. I'll do that. It's like, hey, guys, remember this?
Swinging the hammer. All right. What's the best flour to use to make ramen noodles? This is from John Appleseed.
Flour noodles.
Oh, that's right. They have, in Japan, they have like flour made specifically for noodles, right?
Yeah. So America, okay, I'm going to shoot out brands. So because these guys specifically do ramen noodle flours. So,
Nissin Seifun and Nippon.
Nissin Seifun and Nippon. They make flours. And they also purchased flour mills in Canada. Nissin Seifun did. And if you could contact their sales rep, they'll give you like samples.
Oh, nice.
What's difficult about getting samples is that you have to have a business, right? A lot of these places. Mm-hmm. So
do you have to order large quantities if you want to get
so these bags, they come in like 25 pounds.
Jeez.
25 pound bags, I think. Yeah, I think so. I think it's 25 pounds. No, more than 25.
25?
Yeah, 25 pounds. Yeah, 25 pounds bag. So it's not like you could use it all at once.
Yeah, unless you have one of those industrial mixers and you're making.
Yeah, you know. So that's another thing, man. I see that there's so many people that's out there that needs these products, but they don't want to purchase like the whole bag.
Yeah.
So I know there's a need, and I'm listening to you guys. I know people in the industry, so like there's. In order for us to continue to expand the ramen culture, there's a market for it, so I don't know why they wouldn't make smaller portions.
Yeah. There is a company in that started in Hawaii called the Rice Factory. I think they're in New York City now.
Okay.
And they just would import really high quality rice from Japan and sell it to first they started selling it to restaurants, but then they started selling it direct to consumer. And their rice is phenomenal. Like it's level above what rice you can normally get in America. And I think they just opened the New York location, too. So they're supplying really high-quality rice, too.
Sponsored ads by them.
Oh, really?
I think I seen some sponsored ads
by them. Yeah, they only started, like, a couple years ago. And so it's pretty crazy. So
rice is good.
I can definitely see the same thing happening for, you know, high-quality flour for noodles and things like that. So that's basically all the questions I have. Do you have anything else you want to say?
Yes. Mr. K.S.S. Schwartz. What's up? I think he's in Europe. Is there a good vegan ramen? Yeah, there's. I've had like one. Some of the time, sometimes like, if they know how to make good vegan ramen, I just some places like. Oh, this is a question from my Instagram live viewer, and sometimes people don't give out the best vegan ramen. Like, it just gives them an option, like a vegetarian. Oh, we need an option for vegetarian customers. But yeah, there's definitely. I'll DM you, man. Like, I'll give you a good recipe.
Cool.
Any questions?
No, I mean, just like any shout outs to anybody you want to shout out, or you want to talk about like what you're going to do from here on out? Because, like you said, you're more independent now.
Yeah.
You have your grand plan that you're going to be executing over there.
I'm going to be doing a lot more Japanese food products, just ramen. Ramen is definitely going to always be my focus. But I just feel like there's more to enjoy a fuller experience with eating ramen. I just feel like introducing different Japanese food is going to help your palate of being able to enjoy ramen. I also have a YouTube channel I want to start focusing a little bit more.
Yeah.
I know you guys are all asking me for recipes and more videos. My partner Hiroshi, he's in Tokyo, and just need to have him back. He did my wedding video and all that. Like, he's a good friend of mine, and we're both like, we read your comments. We're excited, like all that, that you guys are excited. So I want to focus more on that. But yeah, my heart is to continue to expand the lowercase ramen culture. And that's about it, I think. I don't know. My priority is my family.
Of course.
And if it's going to take away my time from my family, I'm not going to, like, force things. Mm-hmm. But I'm very relational. I look for people that I could trust. I look for people that I could genuinely talk to and also be partners with in this mission of growing the ramen culture. So guys like you, man, like the Way of Ramen, dude, how did this even happen, man?
You're just a nice guy. I just said, hey, you know, you want to come on a podcast? And you're like, I'm going to be in Hawaii this time. And I just flew here.
Sweet. Yeah,
he's a really nice guy. So
he flew 45 minutes.
No, it's like 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
Yeah. It's a 20-minute flight.
I need
flight.
To come visit
yeah.
you.
Yeah, you should come to Kauai. Kauai is really cool.
But that's it, man. Like, I think, I don't know. I'm very open, so I have nothing to hide unless you're trying to take advantage of me. I could pretty filter shit out like that. But I'm very open to giving people advice and about social media or about Japan or anything. So I'm in the industry, so I know a lot of people in the industry. So it's a small ramen world. I know people, a lot of people in Japan. Look, so a lot. This is good advice, I think.
Okay.
I've gotten questions about how can I learn how to make ramen.
Yeah.
I want to open up my own shop. Can you teach me or can you help me? I'm like, the best advice I could give you is go to Japan, get a visa to teach English, and work part time at a ramen shop.
That's some good advice.
These ramen people. Shops, they pay low wages. Because it's a ramen shop, man. They're trying to push out tons of bowls in a 10-12 counter seat restaurant. Imagine you doing that at your location. It's in your community. It's hard to make money. So they're not going to pay you a lot, but you're going to learn way more. You're going to make better ramen than anybody else in America or Europe. And shoot, you get to live in Tokyo or Japan or wherever, Osaka. If you need recommendation, I know people that could hire you, and but you have to be committed. If I recommend you, you have to fucking work your heart out, you know, like, because these are my friends, and I can't just...
It's your reputation on the line.
My reputation. Yeah. So, but if you have a goal, if you have what it takes, hey, man, it's a good sacrifice. It's a good sacrifice. That's what I did. I had a good job. Stable income, and I took a huge pay cut to work at one of the top ranked ramen shops in Japan. So,
cool. That's some good advice to close that out. And wow, we went like 42 minutes.
That's perfect time for podcasts.
Yeah, it's really good. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks for your time, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's Mark Hoshi from Ramen Culture. Check him out on YouTube and Instagram. I never told you this, but like, I didn't even know about you when I made my first ramen videos.
Oh, okay.
And then I found it like months later and I was like, holy crap. Like, why do I don't even need to make videos anymore. Cause you know, you're making them.
I'm sorry. I haven't made any in a long time.
Cause I don't know what I'm doing and you actually know what you're doing. So I'm just like, but once I realized that, I was like, I'm just like learning and publishing what I'm learning. And you're like, you know what you're doing already. So it's cool. Like, it's going to be cool to see when you start putting out like a lot more videos. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's a lot of pressure.
No. It's a lot of pressure. You know what you're doing. Yeah. Cool. So thanks. Thanks you guys for listening, and I'll see you guys all in the next episode.
Cheers.
So thank you guys for checking out the very first episode of the Way of Ramen podcast, and thank you very much to Mark Hoshi for being the first guinea pig guest on this show. Like I said in the episode, please check him out on Instagram and YouTube. He's putting up some great content, so he deserves your follow. I plan to do a lot more of these podcasts with more people who are really into making ramen. So if you have any suggestions for people that you want to see on the show, please hit me up on Instagram or on YouTube. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you all in the next episode.